Okay, and so tonight we're going to have Eva Grazel talk with us about crafting stories to build rapport and inspire trust. Storytelling is a powerful tool to help shift perspectives from fear to hope, and Eva will share with us her model for crafting stories that create connections through shared values and emotions, which we all know helps foster trust. And once this trust is established, listeners are more apt to believe you and try out what you recommend. Eva's been telling stories for 25 years in venues that range from keynote speakers to workshop presenters. She often uses spontaneous role-playing techniques with her audiences. And the way that I got to know Eva was that she is a survivor of late-stage oral cancer, and I saw some of the things she had posted on Facebook about how she shares her survival stories with others. She's also the author of two children's books, and she founded a six-step oral cancer screening awareness campaign, which I really appreciate because in my work at the health department with tobacco education. Eva also has some signature stories that are recorded on her CD titled A Story a Day. So that's something that we can all listen to on your website, which I found just by Googling Eva Grazel, G-R-A-Y-Z-E-L. And so, Eva, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Well, it's so nice to be speaking. It's really a privilege to speak to everybody today, and I am happy to share all my secrets because I truly believe that the better storytellers that are out there, the better we all look. So I'll begin by telling you what my goals are, and that is really to use story to create connection with your listeners, to build rapport with them, and inspire trust. And once trust is built, then people believe what you say, and they do what you recommend. So storytelling now out there in the world, in the healthcare world, is really a buzzword. We are seeing it everywhere with all of the United Healthcare ads, with all of your local hospitals. It's all about stories. And it's taken off. I mean, I have seen ads for ski resorts and Virgin Atlantic and Crest toothpaste. It's all about story, and it's how companies are now connecting with individuals. Now, when we were kids, I don't know how many of you remember playing show and tell. If you remember that experience, it's not the object that the person was holding, but you could see how that teller felt about the object. So I would like to suggest that the first way to connect with listeners is to use an object that you have an emotional connection to. For example, if you are wearing a ring that comes from somebody that inspired you, or you have a scar, or if you have a scar that tells a story of a battle you won, or a tattoo that says something about what you believe in. Tell those stories. I have met people who have worn a ring, and that is what connected them to the individual they were speaking to. So hopefully right now you can think of something that you're wearing right at this very moment, whether it's a scarf or something on your body that has a story that you can tell when people meet you. We hear the expression all the time, a picture paints a thousand words. So, yes, a picture is storytelling 101. If you can't just tell the story and you want to use a picture or an object as a prop, use it. But when you tell your story, try not to just tell them, this is a ring from my grandmother, but tell them what the ring stands for. Tell them why you wear the ring. That's what's going to connect you to a listener. Now, if you are healthcare providers of any kind or coaches, use the real estate in your office and on your person to tell your story. Look at your walls. I mean, if you've got certificates of education that you've had, if you have participated in local events that have raised awareness about a subject, or even Habitat for Humanity or a breast cancer event, put those objects in the room in which you are so that right away a person can look around and see how they can connect with you without you even bothering to tell the story. And then if they want to hear more, they'll ask. For example, if your keychain is hanging on a little key hook, does your keychain holder, does the little thing hanging from your keychain tell a story? For example, if you have a picture of your dog on that keychain, animals, anywhere you could put pictures of animals, it's a great way to connect with certain individuals. Or if you're big into hiking or biking or some activity, put pictures out there of what it is you love, if you love old cars, because you just may be connecting with a person without even realizing it. Military, any military in your family, that's another great way to connect with people. Just put that picture up of you with that person in the military. And, of course, clothing or lapel pins. I mean, you know, if you're into golf and you wear a golf tie, or you're into or lapel pins, if you want to wear a pin of Make-A-Wish Foundation or Relay for Life or Rotary Club, wear those pins. Put them on your lapel. Every little thing that you show your listeners about what makes you tick, why you do what you do, put it out there. And then it would be very easy for you to then tell them the story if they ask, oh, my God, you did the Relay for Life? I walk for so-and-so. Who do you walk for? And the story begins. There is a study that says that only 7% of your words, the words that you speak, actually communicate, persuade, and engage your listeners. 93% is how you say it. Your tone, your facial expression, your body language. And I'm convinced that if you really feel passionate about something, if you really believe in something, in your story, because it's yours and there's a reason you're telling it, that passion will come across in the way you use your hands, the way your face looks, and the tone of your voice. And that's what's going to really engage somebody more than just the object itself. But of course, it's the object, it's the story that's going to trigger the emotion in you that you will then connect with other individuals. So, the first way that you can tell a story to connect with listeners is using a visual aid of some kind. The second way is to tell a folk tale. Folk tales are, they're not personal, but they have a meaning, a message that connects with you, which is why you tell that particular folk tale. So I'm going to share a folk tale now with you that I connect with. And feel free to use this folk tale if you like it. Once there was a king who had a large, pure diamond for which there was no equal in the world. And one day, admiring his jewel, he noticed a deep scratch. He summoned the most skilled jewelers to repair the damage. Several craftsmen assessed the damage and declined the job, claiming that repairing that diamond was nearly impossible and the responsibility was far too great. Word spread about the great reward the king was offering. A gifted artist from a nearby village considered the challenge. She admired the jewel. She gently turned it in her hands to see where the shine faded due to the trauma resulting in this imperfection. And she said to the king, I can make this diamond more beautiful than it was before. The king was impressed with her confidence and entrusted his precious stone to her care. She had great respect for its inherent beauty. She studied its many faces, observing where the prisms of color seemed trapped. Then with great artistry, she shared her talent without compromising the diamond's integrity, engraving a detailed rosebud just above the defect, turning the scratch into a stem. When it was returned to the king, suddenly there was renewed interest from the public. Admirers traveled a great distance to witness this diamond's metamorphosis, its transformation. The king didn't understand this. Why, in its pure state, was there not much interest? But now it had become the most treasured in the world. After a year, he invited the artist back and asked her if she understood all this increased attention. She said, "King, it's through our imperfections from which emerge unparalleled beauty. I see all of us with diamonds, as diamonds. We are all diamonds with scars and defects. It's our challenge in life to use our adversity so we sparkle with prisms of gratitude, courage, and wisdom worthy of admiration from everyone who knows us." So there's a story. Now, if you found a folktale that you loved and you were trying to sell your coaching, let's say, or convince somebody that you're somebody they could work with, choose a character in the story and say, "I am like the artist. I will take my time and really look at all the intricate details about you, and then I will work with you to come up with a unique solution to the issues." Or you could say, "I'm like the king. I will go far and wide for you. I will look for every possible solution until we find the right one for you." So don't be afraid to actually identify with one of the characters in a story and then use that to promote your practice. The reason stories are so powerful, it's because people don't remember facts and figures about services you might provide, but they do remember the story. So implant your facts and figures within the story. So let's go on. We talked about how you can use a visual aid to help you tell a story and engage listeners. We talked about how you can use a folk tale that you love that has a meaningful message. And then lastly, we are going to talk about personal experience and how we tell a personal story that will engage your listeners. So let's start with your website. When you do, or whenever you give your bio for a program that you're giving, are you telling a tidbit of a story that's going to engage a listener? I remember reading about a hygienist. I was going to a new dental practice, and I saw on the website this ad, and it said, "My husband proposed to me by putting the engagement ring in a tackle box." Now, there in one sentence, I was totally engaged by this hygienist because I thought that it was creative. I learned that she loves to fish, and right away she's connecting with certain types of people. I then was looking at another website, and I read that, it said, "This woman is a cheerleading coach and an avid movie watcher with a large DVD collection." Now, if I were a movie watcher, I would probably choose that person over someone else because right away I would feel a connection to this person. So try to input your passions and your loves into your bios to help connect with people. Okay, let's jump right into the formula for how to craft your story. I usually like to say that we can spew out stories that are like a volcano, but the ash will just dissipate and the stories will never be remembered. What we want to do is spew stories like fire that ignite ideas, emotions, and new thoughts. How do we do this? Very simply, I turned the word SPEW into an acronym. The S stands for select the right story for the right listener. P stands for make it personal. E, evoke emotion. And W, share wisdom. If you have these four elements in your story, you will have told a powerful story that will engage listeners. So let's start right up at the top, selecting the right story for the right person. If you're trying to convince someone to stop smoking, you could tell them till you're blue in the face. But can you find a story that has an emotional content to it that would make them want to stop smoking? I remember a story a hygienist told a smoker who had been smoking for years. Nothing they said would work. And then one day the patient came in and said that she just had her first grandchild. And the hygienist said, you know, secondhand smoke on your hair and on your clothes can affect this child's health. So if you decide to continue smoking, you may want to consider limiting the amount of time you spend with this grandchild. And suddenly, the smoking became an emotional issue about being with her grandchild. And actually, this patient started to quit smoking, and it worked. You know, I see all of us as like a railroad track, and somewhere we intersect. You may be telling a story to someone you think you have nothing in common with. Where do our tracks intersect? And I believe the answer to that question is really in values. You may be in a different socioeconomic background, a different cultural background, but it's through values that you will find a connection. So look at the values in the stories that you're telling. For example, if you value education, or you value integrity, or you value, or whether it's family or religion or philanthropy or community, figure out a value that you think you can connect with this person or this audience on, and then try to craft your story to deal or communicate this value that you believe in. So I'd like to share another story that's a personal story that will connect with the S. I'm telling this story because I know I'm speaking to people who care about health and communicate in the healthcare industry. P, I want to make it personal for you. E, I want to evoke emotion in you. And W, I want to impart wisdom. And this story is a personal story of mine that I usually like to start many of my keynote talks with. And it's very interesting because when people see me walk on stage, they have no idea that I've been through what I've been through. And then after they hear the story, it's interesting for me to say, do you feel differently about me now? I remember being wheeled away from my husband and mother at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City through these large gray double doors, and a diamond-shaped yellow sign read, "No visitors beyond this point." Dressed in my thin cotton gown on a cold metal gurney, I was wheeled into my parking spot alongside other patients coming in and out of surgery. Doctors and nurses were dashing around as I lay there at 8 a.m. for my 9 a.m. surgery slot. At noon, I called over a nurse. "Excuse me, I am so sorry to bother you, but my surgery is supposed to be 12 hours long, and at this point, they'll be operating on my face at midnight. Could we reschedule for tomorrow, please?" "Oh, honey," she said, "they do this all the time now. Don't you worry. Would you like a magazine?" And that's when I felt this frustration deep inside begin to erupt. Why didn't my dentists know what was staring at them on the lateral border of my tongue? Why didn't my oral surgeons question the first biopsy, perform a second? I directed my frustration at this nurse. "Do you know that I may never speak articulately again? I may never swallow normally. Tomorrow, I may not recognize my own face. And you're asking me if I want a magazine?" She backed up, apologized, and walked away. I had nowhere to direct my frustration but upwards. How could you do this to me? I stopped myself remembering wise words of a friend who said, "When you're angry, you're weak." I wanted to be strong. I wanted to raise my two children. I looked right back up and said, "Thank you for doing this to me and not to my children." I lashed out yet again, but why stage four? I stopped myself. I looked right back up and said, "Thank you. Thank you for doctors who can give me hope." I lashed out yet again, but why my tongue? Of every part of this body, why my tongue? I had been a professional storyteller, changing lives through my story, so why my tongue? I stopped myself, looked right back up, and said, "Thank you for taking a third of my tongue and not a third of my brain." When I started to think this way, I felt this strength begin to well up in me. I looked my cancer in the eye and said, "You are not going to squat your ugly face in this vessel, because I am going to fight." That's the story. And I think that this story reaches people who are faith-based. It reaches people who have been through any kind of adversity. And then when I ask my audiences, "Do you feel differently about me now?" Now I'm not just a speaker on the stage who looks beautiful and who's wearing a nice outfit and who's thin. And, you know, I am an individual who has been through really difficult times. And so those are the stories. Don't be afraid to share these personal anecdotes. Yes, there is a border, and you don't want to go beyond a certain place that gets too personal. But I believe that there is a way to tell personal stories where you can impart the wisdom that you have learned from it. Because your personal story, with the authenticity of the story and the integrity with which you tell it, because it's yours, builds trust. That's how we inspire trust with our listeners. I'd like to talk quickly about my children shared you a quick story, because everybody has a child in their life who loves them. My daughter didn't kiss me for 2 years after I recovered. During my illness, she would, one day she walked in the kitchen and kicked my shin. I sat her on my lap and I said, "Honey, why are you so angry at Mom? What did I do?" And she jumped off my lap and said, "Bad Mommy." She wouldn't touch things that I touched, even though we told her she couldn't get sick from sharing with me. My daughter was very intuitive. I believe she knew she could lose me, and she didn't want to commit to another day of loving me. When I recovered, I took her to a therapist, but the trauma was very deep, and I don't think the therapist was very good. And nobody knows my daughter like I do. She was very competitive with her older brother, only 18 months older. And one day I came with this idea for a game called The Smallest Kiss in the World. It was a competition between my two children about who could give me the smallest kiss. And Jeremy said, "Mom, I'll play." And he took my head oh so gently and he gave me this little teeny, eeny, weeny little kiss. And I said, "Oh, Jeremy, honey, that was way too big." And then Elena said, "Let me try." And she grabbed my head like a football and she angled it just the way she wanted it. And she leaned in and I am telling you, I didn't even feel the kiss on my peach fuzz. And yet I said, "Oh, Elena, Jeremy did a way better job than that." And she said, "Let me try again." And she started to ask to play the game. And this put us on the road to recovery. The pain my disease caused my children hurt me more than my disease. You know what? This is my cancer. Leave my children out of it. But it doesn't work that way. Cancer is a family affair. And when I reached my 10-year cancer-free anniversary, I had to mark it. And I marked it by writing these two children's books. It's everything I wished my children had. The first book, Mr. C Plays Hide and Seek, is about what cancer is and all the doctors that play hide and seek with Mr. C. And the second book is more about coping skills and communication strategies. I remember when someone said to my daughter, "Pray that Mommy will get better." And I thought, whoa, you know, that just doesn't sit right with me. What if Elena prays and prays and prays and Mommy doesn't get better? She'll have no faith. I wanted my children to have faith. So I wrote a page in that book that basically says, I pray for courage, strength, friendship, hugs for my whole family, and my prayers make a difference. Do you pray? So every page ends with a question to help children think about how they can help themselves and how adults can think about how they can help the children. So I hope that I have imparted to you how evoking emotion is a critical element in making your story memorable, because messages without emotion have no motion. They go nowhere. People won't remember what you say, but they will remember how they feel. And if you are challenged with the emotions in your story, just Google universal emotions, the emotion of helplessness or doubt or joy or courage or compassion, and find the emotion in your story and emphasize it if that is the message, the way you're going to connect with an individual. And lastly, I hope that it's that you find the wisdom in your life. We all have had life experiences, and we've learned from them. But use your personal story to impart that wisdom. You can tell people what to do. But nobody likes to be told what to do. You know, tell your kid to empty the dishwasher, to keep their room clean, to be kind to their sister. It just doesn't work. But if you impart your messages through your story, through something someone did for you that was so meaningful, that's all you have to do to impart your values to another person. When I was balancing on that tightrope between life and death, I thought good and hard about how I would be remembered. Because you worry about that when you think you might die. I wasn't going to be remembered for sitting through soccer games and taking my children to piano and ballet and play dates and museums. No, I was going to be remembered for how I made a difference in other people's lives. So if you think this is all too much for you, start with telling your own family the stories of the things that you do every day that go beyond your job description, that tell your family about the kind of person you really are. I love this one folktale about a young man who gave up his life to save someone else's. And when he went to the world beyond, he was asked whether he wanted to reside in the place up above or the place down below. Well, this young man said, hey, I want to see both places before I make my decision. First, he went down below, and there he saw this big pot of sweet-smelling, bubbling soup in the center of the space. And there were people sitting all around, and everybody had a long-handled spoon, long enough to reach the nutritious soup. But when he looked at the people, they were sick, pale, just miserable. Then he went up above. Surprisingly enough, he saw the exact same thing, a big pot of sweet-smelling, bubbling soup in the center of the space, people sitting all around, and everybody had a long-handled spoon, long enough to reach the nutritious soup. But when he looked at the people up above, they were smiling, they were full, they were robust. The young man wondered why the difference when both places had the same thing. Down below, the people were trying to feed themselves, but the handles of the spoons were so long that by the time they got the soup could never reach their own mouths. Up above, he noticed the people didn't even try to feed themselves. They only fed each other. And when the young man was asked again whether he wanted to reside in the place up above or the place down below, where do you think he chose? I believe he chose, well, the original version of this Jewish Hasidic folktale, which is 2,000 years old, says that he chose to live up above because he deserves to be in a good place. But I like my ending, which is he chose to live down below because there he could make a difference. And so do you. Each and every one of you listeners, you have wisdom, you have emotion in the stories that you tell, and you can change lives, you can change worlds with your story. Story is a gift. You don't even have to wrap it up, but share it. Share your story to change the world.
Wow.
In conclusion, yes, that's it. That's my spiel. So just in conclusion, SPEW, S stands for select the right story for the right listener. Don't tell a story about the bike ride you took and the people that you met on the bike ride if you're speaking to someone who's overweight and never exercises and couldn't care less. Choose the right story for the right person. P, make it personal. Make this about you without telling them what they need to do. E, evoke that emotion in you. Figure out why you tell this story, because there is a reason. It evokes emotion in you for some reason. And W, impart your wisdom. And when you do that, you have crafted a powerful story. I help people craft their stories. I can coach you on your story, and you can always reach out to me. All right, there you go. Let's open this up. Shoot out your questions.
I wanted to start, this is Allison, just by saying after working in 20 years with the health department, a lot of what you said resonates, and I'll just be quick about that. It just cracked me up, your word spew, for the anachronism.
Thanks. It took me a long time to think of that.
That is going to stick with people, especially in the medical profession. And also the part about the visual. I remember when I first started doing storytelling with people in the health profession, they said, where's your overhead projector notes? You know, where's your PowerPoint? And I said, no, this is oral storytelling. I don't need that. And they said, you know, people in the medical field are very visual. So I love that you're breaking down those walls to remind storytellers that if they want that, then start putting up slides of stuff of you telling stories with people and some of the work you do or whatever it is that's going to make those connections. And I love the little pieces about telling a story about what you're wearing.
Uh-huh.
And also, what was the other one that you said?
Well, wear a lapel pin, if you've got a keychain, if you've got a tote bag.
Yeah, also telling somebody, taking a point of view from the story you just told and saying, I'm the king and I feel, because these are exercises that, you know, at first when you work with people in the medical profession, they are not the first ones that want to jump right in there and try the exercises, but those are nice little skimmed down things that probably any audience could do, but they will be willing to try. So yay. And I'm sure there's other people that have questions and comments about trying to tell stories that engage folks and help move them along the path and the direction that you're hoping that they'll go towards healthier futures.
Mm.
So anybody else? And remember, you have to hit *6 if you're muted to be able to talk.
Eva, it's Elisa. I just wanted to say thank you so much for sharing your personal story, stories that always just opens up my heart. And I loved your question to the audience afterwards of, you know, do you still see me the same way? Do you see me differently now? I think that's in itself just one of the most powerful lessons that we can give is, you know, there's so much underneath.
Right. It's so easy to judge people quickly, and I find myself guilty of it as well. I mean, I remember just last week I was working out in my gym, and there's this guy who has such a loud, booming, irritating voice, and it always irritated me. And then I was looking at myself, and I'm like, why am I letting this man irritate me? And then I turned to him, and I said, are you a singer? And he said, how did you know? And I said, you have a resonant voice. And he told me he was an opera singer, and he studied at Juilliard for years, but now he's in real estate. And, you know, the person who was coaching us in the gym said, Eva, how did you know? But it actually, once I stopped judging him, finding myself irritated with him, we ended up becoming friends. And it's really so easy to judge people without looking beyond the voice, beyond the outfit, beyond the hairstyle or whatever.
Right, right. It's huge to a huge step in overcoming our sense of separation. So, yeah, very powerful stuff that you shared. Thank you. Nice to get to know you as well.
Yes, I know. I know we've met each other very briefly, and I love your work, Elisa.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else have questions?
Hi there, this is Kariana.
Hi.
Hi, I really appreciated what you shared with us, And I have two questions, but I just wanted to say that I thank you for all that you shared, because it's given me ideas for a significant experience in my own life that I'm beginning to write a book about, and also ideas for doing workshops, which I'm doing more of, and how to orchestrate them in a real creative way. So thank you for that.
That's great. Let me just say, I have a list of questions. I actually have these questions on a handout. If anybody emails me with handout in the subject, I will bop off this handout to you. But basically, some of the questions to help you find your story is, how have you exceeded the expectations of another person? How have you motivated change in yourself or in others? What happened on your most memorable day at work? What's the most valuable lesson you've learned from another? How have you helped someone overcome a fear? What factors influenced you in choosing your career? So those are questions that might help you trigger the story that you need to tell.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, so just email me, eva@evagrayzel.com, G-R-A-Y, like the color of my hair, Z-E-L, and I will send you the handout.
Wonderful. What was the end of your email?
eva@evagrayzel.com.
.com, okay. Thank you. My other two questions were just the titles of the two folktales. I really love those.
So let's see. The first folktale, I believe, is called The Rare Diamond. And the second folktale, I call it Up Above and Down Below. There are versions called the Long-Handled Spoon. Like, sometimes that story, it's not a spoon. They have no breaks in their elbows. There are different versions. But, you know, there are different versions. Elisa, do you know?
Elisa, are they in your book?
Yeah, I tell that more of the Zen versions, which is the chopsticks that are so long that they can reach the food but not get them back in their mouths. And that one's called Heaven or Hell, typically.
Yeah, usually it's the difference between heaven and hell. There's a version on my website, too, on that one. And the other one, I forgot the name of it. Oh, the one about the diamond. I know,
yes.
I've seen that. And so if you want more sources, you can also ask on the HSA listserv, and people will tell you specific books to find them in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Do you have another question?
Nobody else? Well, I was. I also like to say that if you've got a unique skill set of some kind, if you juggle, if you if you do something neat with your fingers, or if you've got any unique skill set, use it. Use it in your story. It makes you memorable. And what's unique about me is that when I was in college, I went to Barnard, and I lived in Harlem, New York. I actually learned how to pop and break dance. And one day when I was driving up 95 to give a lecture in Boston, and it was a long road with a lot of traffic, I was listening to LL Cool J on the radio, and this line came into my head. My name's Eva Grayzel. I got a story to tell. And I thought, whoa, that is really good. I turned off my radio, and I started to write my survival story in a rap. You could see it on YouTube, but if there aren't any questions, I'd like to end my little segment here with you with a rap to show you how you can tell a very powerful story in a very short time in a very creative way. Does that sound good with everybody?
Yes, for me.
Okay, great. And then if you do have questions that you think of, feel free to email me. I'm happy to answer them. Okay, so it goes like this. My name is Eva Grayzel. I got a story to tell. It started as a canker sore, just wouldn't go away. It hurt, and my dentist had nothing to say. I told the oral surgeon the sore won't quit. It even gave me an earache. I was sick of it. I was desperate for answers. I needed a solution, but for 9 months, I was living a delusion. You're ready for the DX, the diagnosis? Stage 4 oral cancer. Holy Moses. You think this disease is for those who smoke and drink, but look at me. I'm not the type you'd think would get this disease, but I made it through the hoop. Lucky to speak, so I gotta give you all the scoop. If a sore doesn't heal within 2 weeks, go to a dentist oral surgeon and let them take a peek. Go to a practice that is current education in oral cancer so they make the right evaluation. I survived so that I could tell you my story, but I'll spare you all the details of the surgery so gory. Keep pestering docs till the problem goes away so you don't go through what I did. Just listen up. Hey, know the early signs when they check your tongue and more. The lips, cheeks, throat, palate, and the mouth floor. 6-step screening tells you what the heck is it and what to expect at your next dental visit with the reconstructed tongue or neck muscle to boot. I can still rap and even break dance with a hoot. You don't believe me? Hey, guys, give me a beat. This silver-haired woman could still turn up the heat. And then I do this whole break dancing. And the chorus goes like this. If a canker sore doesn't go away, it could be oral cancer. Catch it early, don't delay. Hoarse voice, lump in neck, persistent cough. It could be oral cancer. Don't shrug it off.
Oh, great. And you have a whole team of dancers, I noticed, on your video as well.
I did. I actually hired New York City break dancers and some studio-trained ballet dancers to work together. It was really cool. I had so much fun creating that video.
Wow. That's fabulous. It really is.
So it's called the Oral Cancer Save a Life Wrap.
Yeah.
All right, so if anybody has questions, feel free to email me if you think of it later on, and send me an email with the subject handout, and I will send you a PDF of the handout for this talk I just gave.
If there's anybody else that wants to make a comment or ask a question or even a suggestion.
I have a quick question, but probably long answer. It's Nayana. There's such a thin line between when you're sharing the story to share wisdom or for sympathy. And so I've noticed you told these stories in a very, very upbeat way. Mm-hmm. And it seems as if you have to have quite a bit of distance to be able to telling it from that point of view.
Well, actually, I really believe it's in the crafting of the story. I mean, if you yourself telling the story are still in a place of feeling like you need to tell it for yourself as opposed to telling it to help somebody else overcome their adversity, you need to get to that place first where you realize your message, you've learned something that the world needs to hear. You need to be at that place before you can tell that story. You know, so I am not in a place of needing sympathy because even though I've had a third of my tongue reconstructed, I've had a radical neck dissection, I have had a lot of surgery, a maximum dose of radiation, I feel blessed that I'm here and I feel like I have a purpose. You know, people say to me all the time, there's a reason why you made it. And I'm so sorry to hear your story, but your story has inspired me in how I deal with my own life. And that's the place you need to be in to be able.
Right.
I never cry. When I'm telling my stories, I don't cry. Tears don't come to my eyes because this isn't about me. This is about how my story can help you, the listener.
Thank you. I think the reframing, it takes a long time to get there. So I really
yes, it does.
Really admire.
And to get there, you need to write out your story and then put it down for a week or two and pick it up and read what you wrote and then say, hang on, they don't need to know this part of it. That's not important, but I should emphasize this part of it. I really do recommend writing out your story. Don't just tell your stories without writing them out. All the best of my stories have been written out word for word and crafted. And I have taken the meat of my story, and that's the story that I share. I don't want to waste your time, anybody's, any listener's time, with even a word that shouldn't be in there if it doesn't have to be. Because that's where you take the leap from an amateur storyteller to a professional storyteller. Your words are crafted. They are thought out. And you have a goal of sharing wisdom, evoking emotion, and sharing some of yourself. When you give up a little bit of yourself, they realize what it has a very subconscious effect. You give up a little of yourself. You're basically saying to your audience or your listener, I trust you with this little part of my life. And then it gives them the feeling that, well, you can trust me with your life too, you know? So that's the effect that sharing a personal story has on other people when it's told right.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Anybody else that has thoughts, comments, reactions, questions? We've got a couple more minutes.
Well, am I muted? Can you hear me?
Yes, we could hear you.
Because I'm not muted. I would love to hear if you have a short other example of a situation in which you built trust using a story.
Okay. Where I built trust. Well, basically you build trust by sharing something personal. I'm trusting you with what I'm telling you, and you can trust me with what you've got to tell me. So you got to give it up. Give up a little bit. I'll share a quick story about my son. And by the way, anytime you tell a story about a child, if somebody has a child in their life that they love, right away there's this emotional connection, automatic. But I decided when I regained my ability to speak articulately again, I decided every day I was going to praise my children, because I recognized how easy it is to criticize the people we love most and more challenging to praise them as often. So every day I wanted to praise them. And I decided to do it in a blessing at night when it was one-on-one, because I wanted to bring faith into their lives, even though I questioned my own faith. And I put my hands on my son's head and I said, thank you for blessing me with my son Jeremy, who is so conscientious of his friend's feelings, who calls grandma without being asked. You know, I would say something, and then I would follow it with, help Jeremy find the strength to be kinder to his sister, to listen the first time I ask him to do something. And I remember one day I said, help Jeremy find the strength to remember to lift the toilet seat. And Jeremy said, Mom, what is the big deal? You're always yelling at me about that. And rather than answering him in the heat of anger after sitting in his urine yet again, I spoke to him with love and softness. And I explained to him what happens to a female's behind when they sit in a male's urine. And my son never forgot to lift the toilet seat again. So this blessing had a very powerful, gave us a moment to cherish where we could really communicate on a much deeper level. And I remember the day when Jeremy said to me, Mom, you know, you didn't bless me in 3 nights. I did this for years without missing a beat. But as he got older, you know, I had meetings, I had other things. And one day he said, you didn't bless me for all this time. I'm like, okay. So I ran upstairs and I put my hands in and I said, and I blessed him. And afterwards he says, Mom, who blesses you?
Aww.
And I told him the truth. I said, well, nobody really. And my 11-year-old son put his hands on my head, and he blessed me. And I learned something profound. It doesn't matter the age you've attained, the education you've acquired, the profession you practice. You can bless and enrich others' lives through your own stories.
Very sweet.
Wow.
Those
well,
are great.
On that beautiful note, I think.
Oh, and wait, one more. We have another couple of minutes.
Okay.
I started a tradition in my family where we have a charity box that I had designed by an artist, and I have it in a prominent place in my kitchen. And when my children came home from school, instead of asking, how was school today, which is a very bland question, and when you ask a bland question, you get a bland answer. Instead, I would start by telling my children something that I did that day. I called a cancer survivor and helped them. And then I would take a dollar out of the envelope that I kept in conveniently in a kitchen drawer. Whenever I get dollar bills, I throw them in there. And I put a dollar in our charity box. And then I ask my children, how have you brought light into someone else's life today? It's a very poignant question. And when you ask a question like that, you get a more poignant answer. And I remember the day Jeremy said, oh, I was captain of the kickball team today. And Mom, I knew who I wanted to choose first, but I chose first the kid who's always chosen last. And that's when I emptied out my entire envelope of dollar bills and I put them all in the charity box because I realized that I don't care that he makes C's and that he just can't pull A grades. I cared a whole lot more about raising a child who's empathetic about the people in his life and the people around him.
Right.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
Sweet.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And what a wonderful story prompt that would be, too, huh? After sharing your story, is to ask people to tell the person next to them in the audience about how they brought light into somebody's life that week.
Or the other thing is to say, how did somebody bring light into your life?
Yeah.
Because either way, if somebody brought it into your life, you're acknowledging that you value what they did. And by that alone, you are teaching your listeners the value of that particular act, the value of being compassionate and thoughtful and so on.
Fabulous. Thank you
Wonderful.
So much, Eva, tonight. And remember, folks, if you want to talk to Eva some more or get that list of ideas about how to shape your stories, it's Eva at evagrayzel, GRAYZEL.com. And I just wanted to remind folks that our next teleconference will be on February 24th, which is not so far away. It's another Tuesday. We're going to have Regina Ress and Joanne Tucker of Healing Voices Personal Stories, and they're going to talk about how they elicit and develop the personal stories from folks about domestic intimate partner violence. And they actually develop these into films that they use to educate other people about it, and they talk about the therapeutic process that they're that their story givers go through in this. And so it's going to be, I think, powerful stuff. And
I can't conclude. I have to conclude by asking everybody if you get an oral cancer screening when you visit your dental, your dentist, and that means that they pull your tongue out with a gauze, they look at the back lateral borders, they check your gums, your cheeks, and the floor of the mouth and the tongue are the most common, the high-risk sites for oral cancer, the floor of the mouth being the site for smokers and the tongue being for non-smokers. So make sure you're getting an oral cancer screening, and if you want to know, learn more about it, check out my website, sixstepscreening.org. Because there are six steps to a thorough oral cancer screening. And on the website, I actually collect stories of survivors. And you would be amazed how many young individuals are survivors of oral cancer. I was 33 when I was diagnosed at stage 4.
Wow.
Eva, why isn't that a regular screening? I've never had that.
It is. It's actually required by the American Dental Association, and you may be getting it and not even know it. So when I lecture for dental professionals, I always inspire them to educate patients because it's the best value that they could provide. If they're giving you a periodontal exam or an oral cancer screening, they should say they're doing it. But quite frankly, if your tongue isn't being pulled out by a gauze, you're probably not getting an oral cancer screening, and you should either ask for it or it's time to find a new dentist.
You're here.
Because you deserve it. You're paying for it.
That's right.
That should be a part of every dental checkup.
A short amount of time.
Yep. Two minutes.
Fabulous.
Glad you liked it. Thank you for listening, everybody, for your time. I'm really honored by your presence on the phone, and keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.